Welcome to Path to Glory, a Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. This is Aman Khusro, and today's episode is about cheating in Warhammer Underworlds. But first, I'd like to give a special shout out to our patrons. This episode was made possible by you. Thank you so much. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory. If that's not possible, we still appreciate the listen. As always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Jonathan Davis.
Hello, hello.
What is up, my man?
Not much. Happy Monday.
I know. I feel like we both had really busy work weeks in October or months.
Yeah, I think so.
For me, it was like my end of quarter. So in tech sales, that can be quite.
Yeah, we have a lot of cutoffs in my work around the end of October. So busy, busy. I also sort of purposely took a little bit of a break, but we're back.
A break from work or the game or?
Yeah, just kind of the game.
Yeah. I feel like we spent a lot of time not doing Underworlds, but that's okay. Because number one, it's COVID. And number two, time off is wellness.
It's true.
So you need to take care of your mind and your body so that you can roll more crits. Am I right or am I right?
You're right.
That's right. Well, so we did finally get the October reveal from the Warhammer Underworlds roadmap that was posted. And so this is a multiplayer expansion, some downloadable fighter cards for two new fighters. These fighters are, well, they're quite unique.
Yeah, they're Arena Mortis only. So they start inspired, like everybody in Arena Mortis, and they don't have an uninspired side.
They're automatically broken. they're always inspired.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember I saw someone on Facebook like, they start inspired. What? No. And I was, someone was like, every fighter in Arena Mortis is inspired. And they were like, oh.
Yeah. So it is the Fullbringer inspired and Dolor Ghast inspired.
Yes. So we've got, well, let's give them proper introductions now.
Oh, okay.
Regis Fullbringer, a knight enchanter. His name is Regis Fullbringer.
Okay.
When I think of Regis, I think of a halfling from the Legend of Drizzt series.
I guess I think of the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire guy.
Oh, yeah, that's another good one. Look at these Regises.
What was his last name?
The guy from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Isn't it like Philburn or something?
Something like that. I don't know.
So now it's Fullbringer?
You know, that's actually... Maybe dun dun dun.
What's happening here?
I don't know. So these were designed by John Bracken.
Yeah,
who is part of the Box Game Studio at Games Workshop, and he from time to time lends his hand to the Underworlds game, and he's kind of the man behind Arena Mortis. So maybe it's a little ode to a great talk show host.
Maybe.
Secondly. And I think we're staying in theme for Age of Sigmar, which is a Stormcast and a Nighthaunt person. So this is Dolor Ghast, a Knight of Shrouds. So,
cool.
Yeah, I like his helmet. he's actually like a hero. I think they're both heroes in the game, in the main Age of Sigmar game. So let's take a look at their stats. Which one do you want to start with?
We could start with Fullbringer. Oh boy. Okay.
Well, first off the bat, this fighter can never be uninspired because it's Arena Mortis and he's only designed for Arena Mortis, and Dolor Ghast shares that rule, but Fullbringer inspired. He's got the leader icon for whatever reason. So he's a level 3 wizard, which is already like, whoa, that's amazing, you know? And yeah. So he's level 3 wizard. He's got 3 move, 2 shield, or 2 block rather, and 4 wounds. So off the bat, he's already giving Stormsire an identity crisis. but it gets better, right? Because we've got Encanter Staff, which is a range 2 smash, 2 damage attack. So pretty similar to Stormsire. But this is where we get this is where Stormsire clearly just didn't do his homework or something, because Spirit Storm is a range 3 attack that hits on focus, but does 3 damage.
Yeah, and it has a special rule on it.
Yes, Spirit Storm, during the deal damage step, deal 1 damage to each enemy fighter adjacent to the target.
And he cannot be driven back.
And he has the rule Steadfast. So he's like, what's that called? Like Chain Lightning. No, not Chain Lightning. So he has Tempest Smite built in.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you give him Tempest Smite, well, I guess he's not a Storm. He's not a Curse Breaker, so I guess he can't use that upgrade, but.
Right. I guess that is kind of the only weakness of these two characters, is that they don't have any faction cards. And in Arena Mortis, if you play a card if you have a card equipped and somebody else uses that card, yours goes away. So they are a little bit weaker when it comes to the upgrade department, if they're picking popular upgrades.
Yeah, but like this guy is what you want Stormsire to be during a game after upgrades. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is like Stormsire with the Well of Power and like Glory Seeker, but potentially better, because this is
always... Storm Daddy.
Yeah,
this exactly. is Storm Sire.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done. Well, he's very good. You know, one thing here that John mentions is that he can bring his mystical might to bear from great distance with his supremely powerful Spirit Storm spell attack action, which I think is quite an adequate explanation. It is quite supremely powerful. So, if you're interested in magic and you like the boys in gold, check that guy out. Dolargast is also quite potent. So he's got a movement range of 5, which I think that makes him the fastest ghost in the game.
Well, I think all the Lady Harrows go to 5 inspired, right?
Well, that's right. Yeah. So he's hanging out with the Banshees, and he's movement 5, 2 dodge, 4 wounds. So another very impressive. I wonder where all those wounds go. I mean, he's just a cape and a helmet. But
yeah.
So let's look at the Sword of Stolen Hours. 1 range, 3 fury, and yes, you guessed it, 3 damage. Unbelievable.
I guess. Yeah. he's not really that good. He's about as good as Lady Harrow, probably not quite as good, in my opinion.
Well, okay, so Sword of Stolen Hours reaction after this attack action. If it took the target out of action, draw 1 gambit card. I mean, I feel like that's pretty efficient.
It's not bad. Thing.
Yeah, you know. And then, you know, he's a ghost, so he can move through blocked and occupied hexes. Cannot be dealt damage by lethal hexes. So, yeah, I guess out of the two, Fullbringer's supremely powerful Spirit Storm spell attack action is quite powerful, you know, is the winner here, but...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. To me, I think Dolargast is probably worth considering, and he's probably reasonably fun to play with, but I don't think he brings a lot to offer that, particularly Lady Harrow, who is very, very similar, but also has her movement reaction, her little push, if you attack somebody else. So, and she has cleave. So that's, and the same, otherwise the same attack. So it's just,
fun. Yeah.
But,
and you know, even
terrifying.
He is terrifying. and John Bracken says so himself in this article on the Warhammer community.
Yeah.
Which he says, are there any downsides? I hear you cry. So I guess he anticipated some of the noise. So well played, John Bracken. You get a little golf clap from me.
Yeah.
But he mentions the point that you mentioned where they have no warband of their own. So they have no faction cards. As such, you must build decks made entirely of universal cards, which puts their upgrades at serious risk. While both are good fighters, without upgrades, they won't last much longer than anyone else in the Arena Mortis.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and that is because if, you know, you play Great Fortitude and then I play it, yours will go away. Or
yes.
Exactly, it works, yeah.
Duplicate upgrades cannot exist in Arena Mortis. A foul curse ensures that when an upgrade is given to a fighter, any duplicates on enemy fighters are discarded.
That's
these
the worst
damn curses. Kind of curse.
It's the foul ones.
Look at you got jokes today, huh?
I guess.
That Thai food put you in a good mood.
Feeling spicy.
What'd you call it? Your spice high?
Yeah, I eat it and then I am in a...
You get spicy.
I'm spicy that's for about an hour.
That's why I like recording on Mondays.
Okay.
Fun fact, we were talking about recording days and Jonathan's like, I just don't want to do Mondays because I get spice high. And I was like, that's the best Jonathan. Spice high Jonathan is the Jonathan. Well, I hope you enjoy our review of those fighters. I recommend you check it out if you're a big Arena Mortis guy. Or girl, or gal, Jonathan, or just player, Jonathan. Are you playing Arena Mortis?
I have not yet. I probably will if we, if I ever get to play in person with people locally to me.
Your buds, sure, yeah. We'll
give it a spin. Yeah.
Well, I would love to hear your stories about Arena Mortis. So if you got some cool things happening, please let us know in our Discord.
Yeah.
But to the main topic at hand, in today's episode, as I mentioned earlier, we will be covering tournament cheating as well as listener questions. And so it's a really interesting topic when you talk about, you know, cheating and you're like, well, why are you dedicating a whole podcast episode to it? But I think Jonathan's going to give you some context, which I think will be really useful because I think it does raise an important question. And it raised awareness, which is, I think, the most important thing. So, Jonathan, you want to give a little context to what happened here?
Yeah. I mean, recently there was a tournament, I think it was in Italy, that had a bit of a cheating scandal. And I'm not really interested in going into the specifics of what happened there. I'm pretty sure it's been resolved at this point. But, you know, there was a player cheating, and I think – it was actually less about a player cheating that people were really mad about. It was sort of how the event handled it. So I thought it would be interesting to have a conversation about cheating, you know, how an event should handle it, what we would do if we were running an event. I mean, we've run events before. You know, you were almost going to run Adepticon as the TO. So, you know.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
You've blocked out.
seems like so long ago. I was really looking forward to that too. I think that's kind of the month where it happened, where we're like, Adepticons in 8 days, woo woo, and then like 6 days out, they were like, you're not going anymore.
Yeah. But I thought it would be a good topic for us to cover, you know, as competitive players and tournament organizers. And hopefully the competitive season is going to start up again, you know, next year or with season four. I think this is just a good conversation to have, and I'm interested to know what other people think as well. So where I wanted to start it was by asking the question, why do you think people do cheat? And like, let's start from there.
You're asking me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into cheating, but I think primarily the idea is to manipulate the outcome in your favor. So more often than not, it's winning, right? People want to win.
Yeah.
So I guess that answers your question. I can go further, but I mean, do you want to explore that whole concept? Like, why do people want to win?
Well, the interesting thing to me about the cheating is it's when you want to win more than anything else. Like, you want to win more than you want to give your opponent a chance to win, you know? So to me, what's kind of interesting is, like, it kind of ruins the game for everybody, I think, including yourself, because you also know that that was probably the main reason that you did win, is because you cheated. But I think it's also very tempting for people to do, because winning can be hard. And, you know, a lot of the time there are prizes. And then, you know, in this game, a lot of the time, if you, you know, you win, you'll get a trophy and people will sort of respect you. And, you know, I think that in a game like this where, you know, the rules are, you know, sort of cut and dry, but there's also some room for manipulation and things like that, I think that, you know, it's something that probably everyone has a temptation to do from time to time. So I thought it was an interesting question to maybe look at, you know, at the get-go, like, you know, why is it happening at all?
Right. And it's really interesting because, like, dishonesty, which is inherently what cheating is, right, is you're being dishonest with either yourself or your opponent or the game as a whole, is a pretty complex phenomenon, right? Like, there's all sort of reasons why people can be dishonest. But I think when it comes to gaming, people, I think winning, and I'm going to be quoting an article I read not too long ago, but the idea was that winning has a strange effect on people, right? Like, when people win, especially when they win in competitive events against other people, whether it's gaming or non-gaming, whether it's sports or whatever, the people who win tend to feel more entitled because they feel like they're better or more deserving. And that sense of entitlement, that sense of success, can actually lead people to be more dishonest in the future because they want to maintain that sort of social entitlement and that status quo. The idea is that once you're a winner, you're always a winner, and you're going to keep trying to win.
And you would rather win and not have it be quite legitimate than you would have to, like, admit that, you know, you lost to, or, you know.
Exactly, because once you win, you want to keep being known as a winner, right?
Right.
So I think there's a lot of, like, maybe social issues that, and, you know, and personality, and maybe even like social behavior that we can explore. But I think the core of the thing is, like, these individuals who are cheating value the win, as you mentioned, over all else. And they don't care how they get there because they want to be known as winners. They want to be known as people who do really well, and they consistently do well because it gives them satisfaction.
Yeah. That makes sense. So what do you think cheating does to, like, if you're playing a game and it's just, like, well known that there are a lot of people cheating, or if you're at an event and you find out later that people were cheating, like, for you, like, what does that do to your experience with that game or with that event?
Yeah, I think it can really sour one's expectations, right? Like, I can only speak from personal experience, but, like, I've been to an event where I felt it didn't feel 100%, right? I'm not going to mention the event name or the individuals or whatever, but, like, I left the event very bothered by it. And it kind of bothers me to this day because I really felt like there were some things that happened that I should have said something, or, you know, someone should have caught. But it just kind of ruined my experience.
Yeah,
to be honest, because
you really can't know, like, you, like, if you think somebody cheated and then you never find out for sure, or even if you find out somebody did cheat, in my opinion, it kind of ruins the competitive nature of that event or that game.
Well, 100%. But most importantly, that experience, right? And, like, life is all about the experiences we have as individuals. And if you associate an experience, a key experience, with a negative event, or, like, you know, like, for people who, you know, like us, who we train really hard to do really well at events.
Yeah.
And then to go there and then to feel like it didn't matter how hard you worked, because no matter what was going to happen, like, this individual, which you can't plan for, you don't know if people are going to cheat, did end up cheating, or at least it felt like they did. And then it kind of, you know, ruins the whole fun. And on top of that, it's a psychological effect, because you start becoming more distrusting. Mm-hmm. Like, there's someone that we both know who, like, if their opponent starts rolling too many crits, they're like, hey, can we just share dice?
Sure.
That would mortify me, because I believe in the dice juju, you know? Like, I used to play 40K. That's how I got into tabletop gaming. Like, in 40K, like, there was a rule in my local store: don't touch people's dice unless they allow you to. It was, like, almost worse touching people's dice than models. So, like, it just really depends. Like, people can get jaded. People can really feel frustrated. But I think the biggest thing is that it puts an asterisk, or, like, a black spot on the event. And moving forward, no matter what happens, you know, if this is a reoccurring event, an annual event, then it'll always carry this weight or this burden that at some point in time in the history of this event, there was some cheating. And like, you know, and then so in the beginning of the question, you mentioned that, like, you know, what if it's known for cheating? Well, that's like playing baseball, right? Like baseball is a game that was designed to like steal people's signs and like try to figure out what the opponent was doing. And like cheating became like a way of the game where it's like, and then to the point where people didn't call it cheating. They just called it baseball. Right.
Are you sure that's not just the Houston perspective?
Well, you know, you know, that's fine. You know, I don't care. We still got a trophy, you know, and we make it to the conference finals every year. Thank you very much. But regardless, what I'm saying is, you know, like stealing signs or whatever is fine. Like in if you go to an event where you know people are cheating,
yeah,
then I guess, you know, that's what you're into. But like,
and baseball might be a weird example too, because like there are some games like Munchkin or whatever where you kind of are supposed to cheat.
You know? Yeah, that's another good example. Or even like Malifaux, right? Where you can kind of cheat your luck a little bit. When you can like cheat it early, and maybe that's not directly cheating with your opponent, but you're like, you know, I guess the idea here is that there are ways in which you can manipulate within the game that you should focus on rather than outside of the game. Like, and I know you want to get into examples later, and I want to give some, but in you know, I think at the end of the day, I you know, if I know, like, for example, this event that occurred in Italy, right? Like if I ever go plan an event in Italy, like that event will always be in the back of my mind. You know, like, do I need to go look out for certain experiences? And there's nothing wrong with, you know, the Italian people or the community, but it's just like, it's a natural byproduct. It's a natural way that humans think, you know, we're suspicious by nature. It's how we've survived as a species. So,
yeah,
I think it's kind of healthy, but also it can get to the point where it's very unhealthy.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I don't know if I have a specific example of, like, you know, a certain person that, you know, was in a playgroup or something that, you know, was known for cheating. But I know that it has happened before. I know it's happened a lot in 40K, which is a much bigger community, you know, so those kind of examples.
Probably. Well, I'll give you a story. There's a guy in Houston who he was doing really well, like in events.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't even playing like these busted lists. He just was just doing well because it ended up everything working out the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he was playing an opponent, and his opponent was like, you roll a lot of sixes. And he was like, yeah, you know, I guess I'm getting lucky. He's like, you know what? There's no way I can win this game, but I'm willing to disqualify myself from this event, but like call you out on the fact that you microwaved your dice. And the guy was like, okay. And then they rolled a couple die and they just kept rolling sixes. So they cut a couple dice open and looked like they'd been microwaved.
Oh, wow.
So he was banned. He was banned for a year from the entire tournament scene. And I guess he just stopped playing after that or moved to another game. But like, I don't want to have to worry about that when I go play in an Underworlds event.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's kind of what I'm getting at with, like, by the question of like, what does it do to a gamer or event? I think what it does is it ends up really kind of violating the social contract that players have when they get into a game like this. Like, you know, whether or not you explicitly like go over it, when you play a game with someone or you enter a tournament, you know, you're kind of agreeing to follow the rules. And although I do think it's everyone's responsibility to sort of stand up for themselves and make sure the other person is playing by the rules, and I think we'll get into, you know, ways to do that. I just think it's important to, you know, just kind of establish that when you do cheat, it kind of ruins, it obviously ruins things for your opponents, and it definitely ruins things for like the game in general if you get caught. And also, I think if, you know, I was to win an event and, you know, even if I got away with cheating, I feel like I would still know that the only reason I won is because I cheated. And
yeah, but some people don't care.
Yeah, I suppose that's right? True.
Like, like for me, like I love to win, right? And I've made it no secret.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, I would want to do it the right way. But
yeah,
there could be people who take it even further than I do, which you, I already feel like you think I'm a bit more extreme than most people. But, you know, like there are, I know people, if you think I'm competitive, you should meet some of the people that I know.
Sure.
And like, And I'm not saying these people are cheaters, but what I'm saying is that there are people who take winning so seriously that it's so tied to their like sense of entitlement or their like their personality or like the way that people will view them that they want it more than the, you know, doing it the right way, which I think is sad, but also kind of dangerous at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that anytime you're sort of tempted to, you know, either cheat or have things go, you know, presumably a worse way for you, I think it's worth thinking about, like, you know, where, what are your priorities? Is it winning at any cost? You know, is it actually wanting to be the best? You know, is it, you know, are you respecting the people that you're playing against? I think those are all, you know, important questions to ask yourself. And because I think we've probably all been tempted at one point, another, like, or another to cheat, you know, in some way. I also know that there's times when I've accidentally cheated, like I've played a card wrong, or, you know, I remember that I had sudden growth, you know, after the fact, I moved too far or something. And I know for me, I feel like those games are almost invalidated, you know, and I feel bad because we didn't get to actually find out what would have happened.
Well, I would slightly disagree with you there, because I think there's a difference between mistakes and there's a difference between cheating. Like an unintentional mistake, because at the end of the day, like if you played sudden growth on a fighter and we both missed it,
yeah,
we both made a mistake.
So I don't disagree, but I still will. I would still feel like it would have been better if we had caught it, and I would be more interested in knowing what the result would have been if we had followed all the rules correctly, if that makes sense. So from my perspective, I guess I don't think there's an example where I feel like I've sort of a long time ago decided not to cheat. And so I don't think I have an example of where I actually did cheat and then felt bad about it. But if I did, I think I would feel like that, but I would feel worse. So I guess that's what I'm trying to allude.
Yeah. I mean, I think no, that's fair, but like the best example I can give is when we played at ATC.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, Duncan, Bills, and I both thought we had tied the game because his bat squig and my Allenson were holding an objective. And then when they were like, do you guys want to play game three? And we were like, how much time is left? And there was like, oh, we have less than 5 minutes. I was like, well, no, because he's playing Molog, and if he just gets one kill, he wins, you know?
Yeah.
And then Duncan was like, well, yeah, but I think we should play. And then T.O. was like, well, you know, we have a hard stop, so maybe you guys shouldn't. And then, so we ended up not playing. And then it was, I guess it was, you know, but, and so then I left that game thinking like, you know, like, damn, I kind of wish we had played that right. and I wrote that in my article too, on my blog, where I was like, man, I didn't feel good about it because I wanted Duncan and I to duke it out. We've played a lot of great games together. And then I remember we were staying at the Airbnb, you, me, and Davey, and we were just talking about the day. And you were like, well, you know, explained what had happened, or I explained what happened. And you were like, why is that a confusion? Like, Bad Squig can't hold objectives.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember how like happy and like a sigh of relief I got, where I was like, no, I actually earned that. It wasn't that I technically won, you know, like I earned that because I did win. And that made that victory so sweet, and why I remember it so fondly, because it was so hard fought. And so, right. That can be an example of the game not functioning the way that it was supposed to. But is it because Duncan and I didn't take into account the actual rules of the fighter? Like, did we cheat? I wouldn't call that cheating. I think we both made a mistake, and we both overlooked something. But yeah. I guess in a technical term, you could consider that cheating.
Yeah. I mean, if you know, you guys had... If your fighter wasn't on the objective at all, and then you guys thought that the bat squig meant that he won, then if I was in his shoes and then I remembered later that the bat squig couldn't hold objectives, I think I would feel really bad and want to correct that issue. So that's kind of what I mean. And then if I had done that on purpose, you know, I to me that would just be very selfish. And you know, even if everybody else had still thought that I won, I would know that the only reason I did is because I was able to trick someone. And personally, I don't think like that doesn't do anything for me competitively, I guess. So I think that's what I'm trying to get at. But it is an interesting dynamic.
Conundrum.
So as a player, what do you think you should do if you think an opponent is cheating?
Yeah, so and this is something I kick myself in the butt for all the time. We've talked about this so many times.
Yeah,
You know exactly what I'm talking about. Just say something, dude.
Yeah.
Like, if I could go back to this particular event and tell myself one thing, I would just say, don't be afraid to call out your opponent and don't be afraid to get a TO in immediately.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I had been doing that the whole day. Like, I remember my opponent was like, oh, that dice is cocked. Or I said, that dice is cocked. And my opponent's like, that's not cocked. And I was like, do you mind if I call a TO? And he was like, sure. And TO was like, that's cocked. You know, like, that's not, you know, like, I don't think my opponent was trying to cheat by like having a cocked dice. He just didn't agree. Like, that's different. But like, like, just if you ever are in doubt, even the slightest suspicion for your own like mental, like well-being, and like, I'm trying to, like, there's this word in like Hindi that I could say that would perfectly encapsulate what I'm trying to say, but obviously you guys don't speak that. But like, for your own benefit, right?
Yeah.
Just ask, clarify, don't accuse. Just be like, hey, is that supposed to happen like that? Or like, sometimes I'll like see like an upgrade still or like a gambit still on the table, and I'll be like, hey, like, is that supposed to be there? And they'll be like, oh, sorry, you know, or move that.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Or like, hey, like, he charged, right? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, sorry. And then they'll put like a charge token down. I don't think those people were trying to like pretend like they didn't charge.
Right.
I just think it happens in a game, especially where you have to like kind of like figure out where all the tokens go, and you're moving cards, and you're moving models, and you're moving dice, and then tokens. Like, that can happen. But I think always ask, clarify. If you feel like it's not resolved in a way that you find to sit well with you, involve a tournament organizer, and then respect the TO's decision.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I agree. I think it's very important to stand up for yourself, because like, the interesting thing is, I think that if somebody is cheating, a lot of the time it can be very confusing for you. Like, a lot of the time it involves something that like you're not familiar with. Like, if they're shuffling their cards in a weird way, you might get suspicious of that, but like, you might not want to call them out on it.
Yeah, well, like in my specific example, like, we shuffled each other's decks and then we cut them, and then after I gave him his deck, he shuffled it again.
Sure. Yeah. I think in the most recent example, it was an issue with the way a deck was being shuffled, or not really shuffled, but it looked like it was being shuffled, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think if you ever notice anything like that, you should immediately call it out, because particularly with a shuffling thing, you know, if someone is shuffling things strangely, they should never be opposed to shuffling more. You know, they should never be opposed to a judge shuffling their deck for them. You know,
well, there's a difference between like a judge shuffling your deck and then like, you shuffle my deck, I shuffle yours, and then you get your deck back from me, and then you shuffle it again, and then you end up drawing into a very nice set of cards in multiple games.
Sure.
I think that is where like you're like, you know, and like you can imagine my was like, oh, you know, he's just double shuffling, whatever, you know. Like, that's good. Yeah. And then
but I mean, ideally you wouldn't even wait for the cards to be drawn. You would say, you know, can you shuffle, you know, if you're shuffling that again, I'd like to cut it again.
Yeah, moving forward, I'm going to be like, "Hey, I just shuffled your deck and it's been cut. Don't touch it."
Yeah.
You know, and obviously I would say that nicer, but I'd be firm with it.
Right. And that's kind of what I mean by standing up for yourself. You know, if something weird happens in a game, and then especially if it's a tournament where, you know, presumably you're trying to win, presumably you traveled there, it's important to you, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, sort of immediately questioning something that you think is sort of out of the norm. And I think there's definitely respectful ways to do that. And I think that the judges should usually, you know, back that kind of thing up. I also think there are probably ways to make sure that everything you do isn't suspicious. If that's
something that
people are, you know, worried about. Like, one of the things, like you mentioned cocked dice earlier, one of the things I'll do before, you know, any game I play is I'll explain that if a dice is cocked at all, I'm going to reroll it. And if a dice is out of my dice box, I'm going to reroll it every single time, no matter what.
100%. I do that too. Yeah. That is, something you have to do because.
And part of the reason for me doing that is to find out how they want to handle those things too.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to hold them to that too.
That's a good point. But I also think it's like, well, you're right. And I think there's a lot of ways in which, you know, you can cheat in this game and maybe we can explore that. Right. But I think being very clear and upfront and concise is the most basic thing is like, be open as much as you can and communicate. If you don't communicate, then that's where it leaves open. You leave room open for interpretation. And as humans, especially when we're not winning on the board, we can interpret things a little bit more negatively. Right.
Yeah.
So
I agree. So what, as a TO, switching hats a little bit here, what do you think an event should do if a player is determined to be cheating?
Yeah. So I think it just comes down to two things. Like, was this person intentionally cheating or was this an honest mistake? And I think it's very easy to get to the root of that, right? Like I'm sure people have been fooled and can fool people, but like at the end of the day, like, you know, if an individual has been accused and the rationale has been true, then it depends on the severity of it. I think if you're stacking your deck or your dice are loaded or you are, you know, purposely ignoring key aspects of the game, then I think that is open to, you know, like a disqualification.
Yeah.
But I also think that like, you know, maybe small things. Like I remember I went to an event where some guy had a restricted card in his deck or banned card.
Oh yeah.
And like he had no idea that the FAR was a thing. In fact, it was the bar at the time.
Right.
And so, TO was like, hey, just want to let you know that you can't use this card. If it's okay with you, you know, we're just going to make you lose this game. And then you're just going to play another game. And the guy was totally cool with it. He was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. I don't think that guy cheated. I think that guy made a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to handle it. I guess I'm kind of thinking, you know, when it's clear, you know, presumably when it's clear that they are cheating and they're kind of doing it on purpose, it's not a mistake. Because sometimes people will just kind of play sloppily. And I think there's a point when that does become cheating. But it can be harder to determine. And I think we'll...
How do you play sloppily in this game, though, when it's hex-based? And the tokens are very clear indicators. Are you saying not playing tokens or not reacting at the right times? Like, what is your definition of sloppy?
Yeah, I think not reacting at the right times. I think maybe misreading cards can be... those things that are kind of the gray area, like if you thought you could score a card, you know, but you actually couldn't. A lot of the time I think that, you know, I'll just say I scored a card and sometimes the opponent will take my word for it. I don't have an example, maybe death from afar with a spell or something. Like if I think some people will make that mistake. And whether or not they know how the card actually works, I think they could claim that, oh, they thought that Death from Afar was like, what is it called? The arcane, I forget, the one for killing somebody with a spell, you know? So if you kill somebody with Sphere of Action, you're not going to be able to score Death from Afar because it has to be an attack action, but you would be able to score the Strange Demise, you know? That I guess I consider that kind of thing cheating, but also it might just be a mistake and you have to be on the other player and call him out. And a judge would have to say, you know, that's not how it works. Don't do it again.
And yeah, but I, on it. Right. But I also think that like, if your opponent isn't correcting you and you made a mistake and they're like, you know, I guess people make a lot of assumptions in this game. You're right. Yeah. Like some people will be like, I score this card. And then even me, like I'll be like, I just scored this and they'll be like, okay.
Right.
And then they don't question what it does or how much glory. Or if they do, they say, oh, how much glory was that too? Okay, cool. You know,
yeah.
But that's a really good point because like there was a time where I think we won't mention the event or the person, but like this person like did really well in an event and then they like explained how the deck worked online and like the way they had explained it did not work like within the rules of the game. Right.
Right.
But they didn't know that. And like, right. So you're thinking like, well,
well,
I guess.
So I don't think that was probably cheating per se. That was just, they didn't understand how it worked.
But what you said earlier is like sloppy play, like to a, like this, if this individual played like arguably at bare minimum 8 games on day one, using these tips and these tricks and that they thought were legal, right? Which again was a mistake. Does that disqualify them because they didn't play correctly? Like, I don't know how I would handle that as a TO.
I think if it was brought up in an event, I would think that that should be a warning, and that if it was to happen again in the same event, then you would have to assume that they were doing it intentionally. And that's kind of what I mean. That's not what I mean as cut and dry. So let's say it's pretty clear that you've loaded your dice. I think I agree that it's the event's responsibility to remove that player from the event in order to protect the other players who are trying to have a, you know, fair time. I think there's some other situations like what we're talking about with the, I think the death from afar thing is a fine example where you're either purposely or accidentally misreading a card. It's up to the first player that notices it to call you out on it. And then if you're doing it again, then I think the judges should probably remove you because at some point it's difficult to tell whether or not you're making the same mistake over and over again on purpose or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
that's fair.
And I think that the problem is if you want to cheat, if you just purposely play things wrong and you're just waiting until people call you out on it and they're not getting a judge, they're just, you know, sort of giving you the benefit of the doubt. If you're able to do that in every single game you play, then you're going to have an unfair advantage. So that's the kind of situation where I think it may be, because if you look at the rules in the tournament packets, if someone gets a rule wrong, it's a pretty lenient extent. You can call a judge and they can give the person a warning, like in the official packet. If they break a rule, they can get a warning. And I think there's good reason for that. I just don't think we actually play that way.
Well, the reason I don't think we play that way is because, like, for the most part, we're all like pretty pleasant folk. Like, yeah. People make mistakes. We're pretty cognizant of that. And I think a lot of people I know who play this game actually like to avoid confrontation.
I think so,
especially at the gaming table. Like, I don't shy from it. Like, if I, you know, I'll call you out on your BS, but I expect you to do the same for me. But I know people who are just like, yeah, I wasn't sure if he was cheating or not, but I just didn't say anything. And it's like, well, dude, you should have said something. You know, and he's like, yeah, but it's like, does it really that? It doesn't, you know, like if they want to win so bad to where they cheat, then let them have it. And like, that's kind of like a comment I get a lot, or that I hear a lot rather, is like, you know, these are the people, like, they just don't care. Like, they're just for them, the game is the fun, not winning.
And I think that's tricky because, like, you know, I guess, do you call somebody out the first time they get a card wrong? Maybe not. So maybe the real solution is you just try to know the rules as best you can and protect yourself.
Exactly.
And then, you know, maybe if it's really egregious after the game, mention it to the judge and say, you know, hey, maybe you should watch this person.
Watch this guy's games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like slow play is an example. Yeah, I think slow play can actually be cheating.
I think it is.
And I know some people. Actually, let's phrase that better.
I think,
and I'm not going to edit this. Like, if you're listening, you're listening. But like, I've seen games and I've played against people who I know are slow playing. And I'm just like, dude, come on. You know, like, and I think part of this game, part of the skill in this game is time management.
Yeah.
And that's a conversation for another day. But like, denying that opportunity of skill for yourself or your opponent or for the game, I think that's cheating. And I'll let people know. I'll be like, hey man, like, you know, you actually helped me get on this track where we got the time clocks. We did that at LVO.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And at the beginning of every event, I was like, you know, per your guidance, I said, you know, I think we both owe it to ourselves to get this game in the allotted time. Do you agree? Yeah. They're going to say yes. And that right there is your binding argument. And so I'll be like, hey, we have, you know, 48 minutes left and we're still in game one. You know, we need to hustle.
Yeah.
And then if they don't improve, then you say, okay, TO, I gave, you know, this is the conversation that happened, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Do you mind watching this game?
Yeah.
I've done that before. I did that on an online event. I said, hey, Jimmy, can you get in here? I think, you know, I think this person is slow playing. And then once Jimmy got in there, it was like, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I agree that it's cheating, because if I know that I can slow the game down and then definitely win because we're only in the second end phase and not the third, then, you know, that's definitely cheating. So, and I don't think that chess clocks work very well for this game because of how back and forth it is, but I do firmly believe that, you know, a player isn't owed more than half the time. So I think it's perfectly fine to push your opponent and have a timer up there. And I think it's great to establish before the game starts, like, you know, we're going to finish these three games, right? And if it looks like you're not, I think you should get a judge, you know, because then when you get to the third round, you know, the judge will be more likely to be in your favor and, you know, just trying to win. So,
yeah. And again, that's the point. Like, everyone's trying to win, but they're trying to do it within the bounds of the moral code or compass of the game.
Yeah. And if you are the TO and that kind of thing happens, my inclination would be, you know, if there's time allowing, I would just say, you know, you guys have to go and you guys have to finish this game and you're going to do it as quickly as possible. Or, you know, whoever I think is going slower is going to lose, you know, cause I wouldn't want to tolerate that. To me, I think as a TO, I think you owe it to every single person that's at your event to try to make sure that everyone is, you know, playing as fairly as possible. Because, like, if people are going to travel and pay and, you know, spend all that time playing in your event, then I think cheating is one of the, like, easiest ways to have it ruined. So,
yeah. Imagine if you travel all the way to another city or another country.
Yeah.
And you, like, you know, not only these expenses, but you're looking to have a great experience and you want to take home these memories, and that memory is, like, fouled by the fact that something occurred. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah. So the next question I have is, what do you think the community should do when a player is found out to be cheating? What should that response be?
So I think this is like a tight rope or a thin rope to walk.
Yeah.
Right. Because on one end, I can understand that when someone is, it's like a witch hunt almost, right? Like, and I think it's very similar and akin to that, where it's like, if you feel like you've been wronged by cheaters in the past and they ruined your experiences, you're going to feel some type of way about cheaters, you know?
Yeah.
So then someone comes, like, you know, if someone is outed as a cheater, then you're, all those negative emotions are going to come back and you're going to be like, you know, bleep that cheater, you know, they should be banned from all events, bleep, 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 something, something, something. I hate cheaters.
Yeah.
And I can completely understand where that person is coming from. And to an extent, I can relate, because I hate it when people cheat me.
Sure.
But these are also people who just maybe got caught up in the moment, or, as we mentioned earlier, like, prioritize the wrong things in life and make mistakes. So I think if someone has cheated and they've been outed in the community, or, you know, they've at least, or they've come forth and mentioned themselves,
sure,
then I think there's ways to go about it. For example, at LVO, there was a very nice gentleman. He was from the UK and he had 7 surges in his deck.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize it. And then he was like, you know, we played and he was like, what do you think of my deck? And I went through his deck and I was like, dude, you have 7 surges. and his face was pure shock. And so for me, I was like, and maybe I was wrong here, but I was like, hey, man, I'm not going to say anything, because, like, honestly, it looks like a mistake. But, like, you know, for the Grand Clash event tomorrow, just double check that, please. And, like, let me know if you want me to double check for you. And then he was just like, no, I'm going to go report myself in, because I was wrong.
Yeah.
And he came up and said that. And then, you know, the TO mentioned that and everybody, like, clapped and was like, good on you for finding that out. And you could tell it was an honest mistake and no one thought of it. No one doubted him the second or third day. Right.
Yeah.
Because he controlled the narrative. He realized he made a mistake and he came out and said something. But in this situation, what I'm assuming is that this person has been reported. Then, yeah, if you are the person who cheated, it's going to be rough. I'm not going to lie. Like, you're going to get a lot of crap from people.
Yeah.
People are going to say very mean things about you. They're going to demand that you no longer play. When you meet people in person, they're going to treat you some type of way. But that doesn't mean that it's not redeemable, right? Like, you can eventually come back from it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just got to be honest. You got to say, yeah, I messed up. I'm sorry. And the community should be understanding of that. Like, I think it's really easy to be, you know, keyboard warriors and attack people online. But like, people are human, and I don't think you should crucify them for cheating in a board game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I agree. I think that's very well put. I guess the way that I look at it is, you know, I think it's kind of a serious thing. It's a real violation of, you know, trust, and it's a real violation of the relationship that, you know, you have with the other person, like across the table from you. I think the experience of, you know, trusting someone and then them violating that trust can be like sort of traumatic, even if it's in a small way. So I think a lot of people, like, I think it can be very, you know, damaging to a community. And I think that's why people react so, strongly sometimes. That said, I think that, you know, if someone does that and then they're able to apologize, meaningfully, then I think they should be let back into the community. I just think they also have to realize that, you know, then it's really going to be on them to make sure that they do everything perfectly from then on, you know, because they have to build that trust back. And I know there have been people in the, you know, like 40K community that have done that. And I'm sure there are, you know, other real world examples of, you know, people that have, you know, cheated in games or sports and, you know, then, you know, cleaned up and come back and stuff. But, I do think it's a difficult thing, but, I think to me, like the thing we really want to condemn is the action of cheating, not that person, you know, forever.
100%. And that 40K example I used earlier with the loaded dice, like that person now plays regularly in the community.
Oh, okay.
And you know, every once in a while, and the guy took 2 years off, came back and was like, I'm sorry for what I did.
Yeah.
And I just want to focus on my, you know, on playing the game because I really enjoy it and I missed it. And everyone was like, we'll give you a fair shot. And that person gets jokes even now to this day. People will poke jabs and make jokes, and they're playful in nature, but you know,
yeah,
it kind of comes with it. You know, like if, like when J.R. Smith missed or like shot the wrong basket in the like NBA finals, like people still give him crap for this day. But you know, like he's obviously recovered from that. So the thing is you just got to own it.
Yeah.
You know, whether you did it or not, you're just gonna be like, yeah, I did. And you know what? It wasn't right. And this is what I've done to, you know, grow from it. So I don't think that if someone cheats, they're irredeemable. I think it's just hard to earn people's trust. You know, my grandma and probably everybody says it's really hard to earn people's trust, but it's really easy to lose it.
Yeah.
So doubly so if, you know, if you've had to earn it the second time around.
Yeah, I think so. I think that if anyone is in that position, then I think the more honest and then the more effort they can put into making sure that, you know, things are fair from then on, the easier of a time they'll have it, even though I don't think that's necessarily an easy thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's like a maturity issue, you know, and like.
100%. But it's also like, I don't even know if it's maturity because like there are people, it doesn't matter how old you are or how advanced you are in life.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
You know, people will do it. And it's just like, it's for the dumbest reasons. But to them, maybe they're more than dumb. Maybe they're something that helps them validate who they are.
Yeah.
And like, that's when you just have to just say, hey, like, why'd you do it? And they're like, I don't know. I just wanted to win. I don't want people to think I'm not good. You know, as an example.
Yeah.
Then you can be like, well, no, like you are good. You didn't have to do that. You know, and then there's ways you can go about it. And, but you know, I think we're getting in the weeds here. Like,
yeah, I think,
so. You know, like don't cheat, of course, but, and we're not saying it's okay.
No,
but I guess we're also saying it's okay if you want to like own up to it and try to work your way back into the community. Like you should be supported, but it'll just take time.
Yeah. I definitely think it's going to be a, you know, a long road to get that trust back. So, but yeah, the next part is we have some questions, from the Patreons. We let them know we were going to be talking about this topic and they had some questions and comments about cheating. The first one is from Hussman. He asked, what specific player behaviors may be considered cheating by some in the community, but not in others? Also, have online events increased the potential for cheating or at a minimum unfair practices?
That's a good question. I've got answers to both, right? So like I think that the deck cutting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I shuffle my deck or your deck and then you give it back and then you give it another shuffle, like technically you're just increasing the randomness, right? But like in some communities, like if you go play Magic, like once a deck is cut and you like try to alter the deck, like you can be DQ'd on the spot.
Right.
You know, and I'm kind of in that same mentality where it's like, I just cut your deck, you know, like I like to control that fate for you and I want you to control that fate for me.
Right.
So I think that can be misconstrued. I think like rolling inside of a box or out, or like, you know, as you mentioned, mistakes, but I mean, I think cheating is fairly straightforward, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, there can be certain practices that are uncommon or more common, like takebacks, for example, is a huge one,
mm-hmm.
right? Where it's like, oh, you know what? Actually, I'm not going to do that. You mind if I, you know, like, cause in theory, like if I'm like, I'm going to charge your fighter and then I move the fighter and I'm like, ah, no, I'm not going to do that. Like technically that's okay. Cause I didn't roll dice. And I'm guilty of that all the time. I'll be like, no, I'm not going to do that. I didn't roll any dice.
Yeah.
And my opponent will be like, yeah, that's fair. You didn't roll the dice. But if my opponent was like, I'm going to charge your fighter, and then they roll the dice and whatever outcome, they're going to be like, actually, I didn't want to do that. I'm going to be like, well, in a normal game, I would have been like, yeah, that you shouldn't have done that because I have sudden growth. But,
yeah,
you know, in a tournament,
or maybe you had a reaction to that charge.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And even reaction timings can be, you know, considered, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, but to the second question, have online events increased the potential for cheating, or at minimum and for practice? Absolutely. I mean, the example that sparked this conversation was an online event, but first and foremost, like I would be
actually don't
shocked.
The Italy one wasn't. Is that what you mean?
Yes, it was. It was an online event. It was a webcam event.
A webcam event. Okay. I thought it
was online.
I thought it was being streamed, but maybe you're right.
No, it was webcam.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah.
And so, like, this individual, like, thought they can be, like, you know, whatever. I don't know if they meant to do it or not. Clearly, it looks like maybe they did. But, you know, like, especially if you're being recorded, like, come on, you know. But
yeah.
I think the biggest thing is, like, I would be surprised. I would be very surprised if most people playing in these online, like, clashes that we call them are... like don't have their deck open on the other screen.
Mm.
Like, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Like cause like there are some people I'm just like, how the hell did you know that was the card you have left? There's no way you knew that, you know? Mm. But like, I can't control that because I don't know how many screens you have. You can have six screens, you know, you can have your deck open up and on a paper in front of you. I don't know that. You could be writing down what cards I'm playing. I don't know that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, people can be like slow playing where they're just like, I swear. Sometimes I feel like people are just like taking their time just to mess with me. But like,
yeah. I think, you know, like, I think with the cam games too, like honestly, there's almost anything you can do in a cam game because a lot of things are just out of sight.
Easily. And like, again, this whole system relies upon integrity and equal practice, but like, by nature, that's not going to happen. There's always going to be someone trying to exploit the system, whether that's within the bounds of the game, like when you know, like spamming like Empower, like Recurse Breakers, like that was,
yeah,
that can be considered like breaking the game internally, but then you can try to break the game externally, and that is probably cheating. But
there's always a possibility of that happening. Yeah,
I would be very surprised if most people aren't doing one of those things, because there's no way, there's no way. Like,
yeah, I've thought about the having your deck up thing before. I don't know if there have been any rules announced as far as that goes. I don't know if
you can't enforce it.
Yeah. I guess I almost think that because you can't enforce it, it should just be a rule that you can do it. You know, I think if I was,
but like, what are you going to say? Like, oh, okay,
cool. Yeah, I mean, I would just say, if you want to, right.
I mean, yeah, I guess you can put it in the rule book, but there's just no way you can enforce it. And I think rules need to be enforced.
Oh, well, I mean, because the moment that they can't be, you're running an online event, I would just say if everybody wants to, they can have their deck on another window next to them.
Oh, you're saying have the deck open.
Yeah. I mean, because there's no way to enforce, you know, there's no way to say people can't. So you have to say that they can.
Well, I don't think you have to. I guess. Like most TOs, they just don't say anything.
Yeah.
Because they just, there's better not to comment on something than to comment on it.
Yeah.
Because it might turn more people onto that practice. Right. But
I guess
so. No, it's like, and then again, like maybe, I don't know, maybe none of my opponents have ever done those things, but I feel like they have because, you know, I'm jaded because I felt like I've been cheated before too, you know? So like immediately you start thinking the most negative thing, even though you know some of these people.
Well, and I think that's why it's a good idea if you're running an event and, you know, you want the event to be competitive, that you make the rules as airtight as possible and then you enforce those as, you know, well as possible.
Right. And I think, but the medium that we play on, at least in the last couple months, isn't airtight.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that. And you mentioned takebacks earlier, and I think those are an area that, like, technically, like, we do not follow the rules there entirely. Like, if you say you're going to play a card, you kind of have to play it. But I know that it's kind of normal for people to allow takebacks. What I would say about takebacks specifically is that if you intend to really hold your opponent to those rules, I think it's important to do it really consistently because it really isn't the norm. And I think you should probably even tell them right at the beginning, like, hey, I'm going to play this game as according to the rules as possible. And that means I'm not going to ask you for any takebacks and I'm not going to give you any either. But that may just be like a good sportsmanship on my part.
Yeah. And but like conversely, like I can remember the last, like one that I played an event where I was like, I'm going to actually put, you know, I'll put Great Fortitude on Thundrick.
Yeah.
And then, and like, he's not the one with one wound left, you know?
Yeah.
It's Lund.
Yeah.
And then my opponent's like, all right, I'm going to shoot Lund. And I was like, why? You know, you can't, I was like, yo, keep in mind, he has a Great Fortitude. And he's like, no, he doesn't. Thundrick does. And I was like, oh. And he was like, I know what you meant. You can go ahead and do that. And I was like, okay, thank you so much. Cause like, that was my intent. I think there's a difference between playing with intent and playing with like, and just like trying to claim you're playing with intent. Like, for example, my opponent, they were like, hey, I'm going to charge in a way in which I'm not in range of your Storm Sire.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, sounds good. And then they charged and then they were in range. And then in my turn, I was like, all right, I'm going to shoot you. And they were like, oh, I mean, I was trying to not be in range. And I was like, that's fine. Go back.
Yeah.
Cause you told me you were trying to do that.
Like, yeah.
And like, there's this whole philosophy online where it's like playing with intent. So like right now I'm playing another game, which we've talked about a lot, Marvel Crisis Protocol. Mm-hmm. And one thing I love about that, their online community, is that we play with intent. So if I'm saying like, I want to move my fighter here and I want to make sure that I'm not in range of your fighter's attack, but I'm in range of this secure.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, okay. And if they bring out the measuring stick and then they're like measuring stick, like briefly overlaps my base, they're going to be like, well, I know what you meant. So don't worry.
Right. And intent is very common in the measuring games like 40K and Marvel, because it's really the only way to play quickly and not like micromanage everything. Yeah. So I think that that's great. I agree that there are intent issues here. I think your example with the upgrade is a really good one. And that's why I mentioned that I think if you are going to be a real stickler in a way that isn't really the norm, it's important that you let your opponent know that. And it's also important that you follow your rules as closely as possible too. Because if you put the wrong upgrade on and you're going to hold your opponent to it, then you need to hold yourself to it too.
Agreed. 100%. 100%.
But I agree. I mean, I tend to play as much as possible. I like to, you know, I want to know what your opponent was trying, my opponent was trying to do. And so if they do something and I think they don't understand, you know, or I think they made a mistake, or, you know, I think they're targeting the wrong fighter or something. Sometimes I'll even be like, you know, so he has 3 health and you're doing 2 damage, right? You know, just to make sure that everything is happening the way we both think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's another example, actually, I just thought of, where, like, I remember I played Tony one time and this was in a final. And he was like, how many wounds does Iron Hail have? And I was like, oh, just 2.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. And I guess, and I don't know, I didn't mention the upgrade because like my gaming community doesn't, my local community doesn't do that. So this actually kind of answers Hussman's questions again. He was like, okay, well, I hit you and I got up, rolled a crit, so I do 2 damage with Allo. And I was like, all right, I'll react with the potion.
What's oh, Magmalt.
Potion of Constitution.
Whatever, yeah.
Potion of Constitution. And he was like, oh, okay, well, you know, technically he has 2 wounds in Potion of Con. And I was like, yeah, but you can see it. And he was like, well, like in my gaming group, people say that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think that's a good
example. And I was like, oh, okay. In my gaming group, we don't, because we just look at the table.
Right.
And he was like, well, yeah, I know, but like, And then I was like, oh, okay, my bad. Like, do you want to redo that? And he was like, no, it's fine. And I was like, okay. You know, like, I gave him the opportunity. He said no. But
yeah,
I can see why he was kind of annoyed. But like, that wasn't my intention, right? It was just like that's a, for me, it was like, in my mind, it was like, how many wounds? Oh, he's taken one. He has two left.
Right.
You know,
yeah, but I think that's actually a really good example of kind of a gray area, because like, I know some other games will have, like, I think it's Magic. Like, if you ask your opponent a question, they have to tell you the truth, but they don't have to tell you anything else. Something like that. And so, you know,
but like, that wasn't my intention. Like, I wasn't trying to game him.
Right.
Like, my mind just took that question very simply.
Yeah.
Like, how many wounds? Two, sure. You know,
but you know, so that's, I mean, that is interesting. Like, if he reduces the damage, then are you still giving the right information? But I don't know. I think that kind of almost falls into a sportsmanship thing. If you kind of know what they mean, then you should, you know.
Right. And when I realized what his issue was, I was like, we can do a take back if you want. And he was like, no, dice have been rolled. And I was like, okay, I respect that. You know, my bad.
Yeah, I think that makes
sense. And then I mentioned every upgrade afterwards. because like, you know, I was like, I don't know anymore, you know, but now moving forward, like but I learned from that. Right. So now when I plan events now, I'll be like, yeah, this one has Magmal Drought though. Keep that in mind. Or like, you know,
yeah.
I have, you know, so that's.
Yeah. Cause the upgrades are upside down. So,
yeah, I know, but yeah,
I guess we can go to the next question. This is from Compaq. I don't know if either of you play Age of Sigmar, but in their latest General's Handbook, there was a set of guidelines for new players on good etiquette, like rolling your dice in plain sight. Do you have any for new Underworlds players, any etiquette tips? That's a good question.
Yeah, I think what we said earlier, right? Like for me, at the beginning of every game, I go, this is how I play my game. I'm going to roll dice. If any of them, I purposely bought a dice box that no longer allows dice to be cocked,
mm-hmm.
but I used to have a dice box that did cock. But even I said, you know, like I'm going to roll these dice. If they roll out, I'm going to pick them up and roll them back in, because only inside counts. Right. Don't touch my dice. I'm not going to touch yours.
Yeah.
If you want to see my dice tray, you can ask, I'll lean it over or you can look over. And I'm like, I'm also like, you know, but it's like, and then I say, if you ever have any questions about what I'm doing, please ask and interrupt and clarify. If you're not sure on what a card does, let me know and I'll hand it to you so you can read it. And feel free to ask as many questions as possible, because I want to make sure that we're both understanding what's happening at every moment of this game.
Yeah.
And so that would be my advice for you is, you know, enunciate, like just be very clear on what's happening at all times. If you get a reroll, say, my orc, when he's inspired, Iron Skull gets a innate reroll because he has boss choppas. And they're going to be like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because like, I see a lot of people who play this game a lot where they're like, okay, reroll and this and that. I'm like, hold on. Why do you get a reroll? You know, like I feel like I'm pretty well versed in all the warbands, but sometimes you just don't remember everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I think talking through everything that you're doing in as clear a way possible is one of the better ways to have etiquette. Like if I'm rolling dice and just like quickly picking them up and saying like, you know, one crit, one success, you know, and I'm going too quickly for the other person and I'm sort of using like shorthand, they may not be able to follow it. Like I try to say like, okay, I'm rolling three dice. I'm looking for hammers and I have a reroll, you know, and I'll do it quickly. But if I spell it out like that, then, you know, they can see the hammers. They know what I'm going at. I don't even have the opportunity to like fudge something really if, you know, I've already declared everything and I'm showing them, you know, what's what. They don't have to wonder what the success is because I've already told them I'm looking for a hammer, you know, or a smash, I guess. So I think that's good. I mean, I think honestly that the core rule set and the hex-based system of this game actually make a lot of the issues that some other games have sort of non-issues, like measurement and range and things like that. I think the hexes make a lot of that really clear. That's one of the things I like about the way that works.
But even with blocked hexes, you know, because sometimes that can be a gray area. Yeah. I will just be like, hey, if I'm in this hex, do I have line of sight?
Sure.
Because I want my opponent to be on the same page. I might know the answer, but I want them to be aware that is, can we agree on it? And if he says no and I say yes, then we'll call it TO.
Right.
Problem solved.
Yeah, I think that's another thing. Like just declaring what you're doing and like sort of like almost why in an intent sort of way. Like, I'm going to go here so that I can hit him, but you can't hit me. And then, you know, if that's not correct, then you can say, well, you know, I said that that's like, that was my understanding of how it worked. Why didn't you correct me? You know? And then at least I think you have some ground to stand on. But because if you don't do anything like that, then you don't really have any ground to stand on, you know? But, it's good. I think that in general, people are pretty good about, we don't have terrain to hide dice behind. So it's not too big of an issue. I do think shuffling clearly in front of your opponent before the game and then letting them cut the deck is good etiquette.
Yeah, dude, I insist. If people are like, nah, I don't want to cut your deck, I'm like, why? He's like, well, every time I cut my opponent's deck, they get good cards. I'm like, okay, well, if you don't cut it, the TO is, you know, like, I don't want to give you an opportunity to like claim that, you know, this is not even like the cards didn't come out in the right order or something was hanky panky. Like, nope.
Yeah.
Someone's cutting the deck.
I've had that happen.
I don't care where you
cut it. And I'll just usually cut it for them, I guess. Like, I'll just say, all right, well, I'm going to cut it. Or
no, I call the TO. I'll sort of
push that they'll do it, you know.
At LVO, like, David Cutts would come up to the round at every start of the round. He's like, need me to cut your deck? Because like, people kept saying they don't want to cut my deck. And I was like, all right, well, you're... And so he would just come and cut my deck. And
that's funny.
And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. I've had a couple of people say, yeah, you're fine.
I don't like that. Yeah. I've had someone like take the top card and put it at the bottom and I'll just laugh and I'll be like, all right, you know, like you did something.
Yeah. I think it's not common in some communities. And so they don't really, I think maybe people just don't understand what the intent is there. I think that.
Yeah. I guess for me, like I played Yu-Gi-Oh in like elementary school and middle school. Yeah. So
yeah,
if you want to talk about cheating, talk about Yu-Gi-Oh. Yikes. People changing decks midway through tournament. That was fun. No. but that's another example, right? Like cards, you know, like one example that I was really frustrated with was like, I wasn't sure if this card had been in their deck at the beginning of the event.
Mm.
So I tried to look at their list and the list was blank on BCP.
Yeah. And that's a thing as an organizer, you really need to make sure that you are checking those decks.
Yeah. I'm like that really, for me, that was like validation. Like they're like, this person doesn't have a deck. And they were like, oh, well, you know, sometimes BCP doesn't load correctly.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, like, you know, you should have as a TO, like you should have probably,
right,
you know, looked at that. And he's like, you know, and I can't get mad at the person. Like they're volunteering their time to run this event. So I was just like, okay, I understand. Yeah. And he kind of just dropped it there, but you don't want people to like think like that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you don't, if you, you know, if you're a TO and you're requiring the decks and you're not, you know, and you should be checking them. And then that way you can, you know, be sure about those kind of things. But, you know, I guess if anyone is running an event, that's just something to keep in mind because I think it really helps the integrity of what you're trying to do there. So,
yeah.
Let's go to the next question. This is from Val. He says there are, in his opinion, there are at least two categories of cheating. The first one is examples like stacking your deck, marking your cards. That's something we haven't really mentioned yet. Marking your cards, any shenanigans related to shuffling and counting a dice roll even when the dice is cocked. He thinks dealing with category one cheating is fairly straightforward once spotted because it's, you know, you almost have to do it on purpose. That makes sense.
I can agree with
then that. Then he says category two examples would be moving a fighter too many hexes, scoring a card without having met the conditions, rolling too many dice. And these this category relates more to game-specific rules. Dealing with category two cheating is much more difficult because it happens all the time for non-malicious reasons, such as when a player thinks their fighter is already inspired or misreads a card. He says the problem is that a cheater can do this on purpose and it's hard to prove. He thinks there needs to be a line drawn how often it happens in a game, but it's hard to define a threshold. I think that's a good way to separate those two things. Then he has a question. Where would you draw the line? Another standpoint worth considering is that watching and checking your opponent's moves is also an integral part of the game. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, so I like category one and two. I mean, I think the dice cock thing can be maybe category two because some people don't care about cock dice. Some people do.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you know, if it's pretty obvious that there's something particular with a certain set of things and non-particular with some other things, then it's probably category one. Category two is a lot harder. And I don't think, I think you can draw a line, right? Because, but I do agree that it's an integral part of the game that you need to hold your opponent accountable just as much as you hold yourself accountable in the game. In fact, you need to, you know, like, make sure that everything is okay with you, because if you disagree with something that's happening, then it, there might, there's a good chance it's probably not okay in the game. Drawing the line is hard because you could have an opponent who could, like, fake some of that. But if, like, this all goes back to communication. Communicate with yourself, your opponent, and the TO. If the opponent, if the TO every round gets in a complaint from their opponent, then it's not a coincidence anymore. Well, it is a coincidence, right? It's no longer not a coincidence. And I know that that can kind of feel crappy because the opponent can be like, oh, I thought my fighter was inspired. Then I would just have been like, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to, like, let the TO know that this happened so that in the future, this doesn't happen again. You know, it's a good reminder for the both of us. And I kind of make it like that. Like, I make it like it's a lesson for the both of us. But my intent in that situation is to be like, you know, whether you made a mistake or not, like, now you know not to do it again. And if you do it again, then you're probably cheating. Right?
Yeah.
So I try to always phrase things as a learning experience, or like I'm clarifying a question. Because I will never, ever, ever accuse someone of flat out cheating unless it's just stupid blatant.
Yeah.
Where, like, a card comes out of a sleeve, I'm like, dude, what the hell was that?
I think that I think there is a point when you draw the line, and that's probably after you think it's clear that, you know, you're going to have to be paying super close attention to everything that they do to make sure that it's, you know, according to the rules. And that's probably like the second or third time you catch a mistake in a game, you know. And I think what I would do at that time would be I would ask a judge to come over and watch our game and, like, make sure that he's following the rules. But I don't know. It's tricky. It's definitely tricky.
There's a difference between watching the, like, the, yeah, but, like, I think you have to be more preemptive with it.
Yeah.
Like, you, if you wait too late, then the judge will be like, well, I wasn't there to see it. It's your word versus his or hers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, really, I guess when it comes down to it, you just have to make sure that you know the rules and you know the rules of their stuff and you know the rules of your stuff. But I think if I thought it was happening a lot to the point that it was very disruptive, I would ask a judge to come watch our game and eventually give them a warning or something if they're not playing their cards correctly. But it's I don't know. It's tricky. I don't know. Like, what do you do if the people are just consistently playing things wrong? Other than call a judge.
Well, you know? Either they don't know the rules of the game, which, and you'll still need to call a TO, or they're just not, they're playing dumb and you got to call a TO. I think people need to realize that calling a TO isn't a bad thing.
Yeah. I think that's definitely
true. I know that a lot of people hate confrontation, but calling a TO is not confrontation. It's truly not. Yeah. It's just making someone aware. You're not a rat. You're not telling on anybody. You're just making everyone aware of what's happening so that people can make better informed decisions moving forward. And I need to get better at that too.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that is going to wrap up our cheating conversation. Unless you have anything else to add.
No, I don't. Well, actually I do. So while I can understand the allure and appeal of cheating or whatever you want to call it, my advice would be just don't do it. We all play this game to have fun. We all want to take an experience and from which we learn. And I know that winning can mean a lot to some of you. It means a lot to me, but it should never compromise your integrity. And if you ever have cheated in the past and you didn't get caught, consider yourself super lucky, because eventually you will. And it's just going to be really embarrassing when it does happen. And you don't want to be known as that person.
Yeah, that's actually something I didn't think about, is if you've been playing for a while and then you get caught cheating, like, no one's going to trust any of the games that you've played before that either.
Yeah, you can win like 10 grand clashes, but if you get caught cheating at one of them, all of the 10 before that are invalidated.
Yeah.
Because they'll be like, oh, he probably cheated, or she probably cheated, or they probably cheated. And you don't want that. It's not worth it, man. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I can say that I could have easily cheated in any of my games, right? And I could have had 5 grand clashes.
It's better to come in second every time.
But for real though, because no one, like, you can never say I cheated.
That's absolutely true.
Because I could have. I mean, I'm gonna be honest. We just pointed out some really easy ways to cheat in this game. A lot of people can do it, and a lot of people will give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
What's really funny is, like, a lot of people will just take your word for it because you're a content creator. That's one thing I noticed. It's like, dude, I want people to call me out on, like, I played Stuart Fishkin, shout out to him, in the Warhammer Fest. Yeah. He questioned everything I did. Everything. But I appreciated it because we both walked away from that game fully confident that we were aware exactly what happened and what went down.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, like, to me, that's what's so important. And one of the things I forgot to mention is, I think as far as running an event goes, one thing I would love for more events to do is have a judge at the top table to make sure that everything goes smoothly, especially if a game is being streamed. Because for as a, like, observer, and, you know, someone trying to enjoy the, you know, like, sport, so to speak, of Underworlds, when you see a game mistake, whether it's cheating or not, when it takes place in a, you know, especially an important game, it kind of ruins the experience, because you know that something shouldn't have happened the way that it did.
Yeah. That goes back to, like, different culture philosophy, culture doesn't have to mean, like, ethnic culture. Right. It can just mean game culture, right? Like, Games Workshop streamed events, like, there is no judge for Warhammer Underworlds.
Right.
When I played in LVO, there was a judge.
Right. And I guess, just my opinion, I would prefer there be a table judge. And I actually heard that at some of the earlier Games Workshop events, there actually were judges. I think it was Dave Sanders was actually sitting there making sure people were playing his game correctly.
Yeah, dude, and I love that. And yeah, actually,
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and going back to LVO, we had a table judge. We both ignored him. It was like, you know, there was an exact example where it was like, my opponent charged with Griswold with sudden growth and none of us caught it. And then he owned up to it like 3 activations later. And he was like, oh crap, he has sudden growth. And then we were both looked at David, like, what do we do? And he was like, well, you can go back to that activation again. And that was like 3 or 4 activations ago.
Yeah.
And we were just like, nah. And I kind of feel bad because even Tony was like, dude, what the hell? Like, you asked him to actively judge. And then when he did, y'all said no. And I was like, yeah, that's our bad. And going back, I wish we had listened. But, I prefer the active judge, because the active judge should be impartial. Like, if you're running an event and I make it to the final, I would hope that you just, like, you, and I know you would, but I'm just saying, like, my opponent might be like, well, your guys are path to glory, you know, like, you might be calling it in his favor. Like,
yeah, that might actually be to the point that it's a conflict of interest, but I do think that,
get 2 judges then, you know?
Yeah. But the thing is though, like, I would totally understand if somebody wasn't comfortable with that. But if you were playing and I saw you made a mistake and I was the judge, I would want to call you out on it, because, like, I wouldn't want you to win and then find out that you did something wrong. Like, to me, I think that would ruin it for you, you know? And that's why I think it's so important to have table judges. Of course, I also think it's a very difficult thing to be a table judge, because you have to be paying attention to everything that's happening in the game, and you have to understand what's going on better than the players, or as, you know, as good as the players. And you don't want to be interrupting the game. So it is a big ask, you know, at the same time. But
I would just say that if there is a table judge, then only the table judge should speak.
Absolutely.
If there is no table judge, then everyone should be quiet. Because in theory, if you want to talk about, like, ways in which people can be perceived cheating, like, your opponent or, like, random people pointing out things.
Yeah.
And they're doing it for the right reasons, but, like, no other game had that scrutiny. Why is this one?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, if I forget to pick up a glory point, that's on me.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you letting me know. And if that helps me win the game, I'll thank you for it. But, like, imagine my opponent was like, you know, like, and even in my opponent, like, maybe they were like, I'm glad that someone said something. But, like,
yeah,
the whole point of playing in person and playing a game that's not auto done for you is that the whole point, and even in sports games, there are things that happen due to error.
Yeah, that's true.
Human element is managing the human element is a skill, and the human error element can lose you games. And, yeah. And you know,
so yeah,
don't,
if there's not a judge, then yeah. I think that it actually just does come down to whatever the two players agree happened, you know, because that's yeah. like, that's kind of how all this, these games work.
And if you want to ask for opinions, then you can.
Yeah, that's true.
But like sitting down at the table and grabbing a glory token and handing it to the dude and being like, hey, you forgot to grab this last turn. I can't validate that. I mean, I guess we could, but like,
yeah, it's just one of those.
It's just like, just one of those things.
Yeah. It can be easy to do that incorrectly. I think
I've been through a lot, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
But
yeah,
we
let's, let's move to our normal listener questions. And, that'll be it for the episode. The first question is from Beard Arm. They say, Games Workshop and tournament organizers should allow board summary sheets with an image of each legal board on them in order to help players choose their boards faster. I could see someone saying that knowing all the boards is another part of the game, but it also bypasses a step in the game that can take a lot of time, the repetitive taking out, unfolding, and examining of multiple physical boards. And I think there is a link here. Someone on Facebook, Tim Dunn, made a document that has a picture of every single board on there. So I think that's pretty cool. What do you think about that? Like a summary sheet?
Nope.
No?
No.
What don't you like about it?
That's skill. It's skill, man. Trying to figure out the right deck or the right board at the right time. I see where this like Beard Arm is coming from. Choosing boards faster can be a tool.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of the game is like knowing your boards well and knowing what boards work for the situation.
Well, so do you think just being able to see all of the boards at once reduces that in some way?
I guess that can be, well, kind of.
Hmm.
You might forget about a board. I mean, like I'm the type of person, like sometimes I'll just have all six boards out and I'll just lay them on top of each other and I'll slowly take them off and figure out which one's the best. And I think you've seen me do that. But like,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I guess if I'm not being like, I'm not trying to be elitist or anything, like,
yeah,
you know, yes, I think in theory, Beard Arm's idea is a great one because it just reduces the amount of time that players have. But like, also, like, I know a lot of people who only bring like two boards to an event.
Yeah.
Like I'm the idiot who brings all like six or seven.
I think from my perspective is that in general, the really good players are going to know what board they're going to use anyway, but I don't think it would hurt if it was something that everybody had. I think someone in the chat on the Discord responded that it would be a cool thing to have one of these at every table, and that would just help save a little bit of time. And in that sort of situation, I think I would be okay with that. But I'm also not sure how much time is really wasted. So I don't know if it's a big deal, but I thought it was a cool chart for sure.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I really don't want to be picky here. Like, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I feel like the less aids, the better, because you have to focus on what you know.
Yeah, that's true.
But maybe I'm just nitpicking. Because
Especially as we get more boards, I think if the only thing it's doing is helping you, you know, just, you know, see all the boards at once and then saving you the trouble of flipping through them for a couple minutes or whatever, I think I'm generally okay with it. I definitely wouldn't want, like, you know, dice apps or any sort of in-game aids during the game, you know. But yeah, I think that's an interesting question. The next question is from Matt, who we had on our previous episode. It's a series of questions here. What three cards are you relieved to see go when Nightfall rotates out? Huh. I don't know if I have a real answer to that. I know we're probably going to do it. Okay, go ahead.
Longstrider.
First Speed. Oh, yeah. Offering. You're right. Actually, you're right. Regal Vision.
Didn't you just get your butt handed to you earlier?
Yeah, Moloch.
You're just complaining about those cards. Come
on, what's his distract? No, I guess he gets to keep his distraction. Whatever the three Night Vault cards that Moloch loves the most are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm also kind of tired of like Potion of Rage.
Hmm.
Though I think it's been replaced.
By Strength of Terror.
Yeah, but that card's going to be there's no way.
Yeah.
So I mean, it would Potion of Rage would probably make a comeback, but like, you know, like even some other cards like Well of Power.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess.
Acolyte of the Brains, like get out of here.
I won't miss the tomes at all. Yeah, honestly, most of it. I mean, I think at this point a lot of decks aren't using that much stuff from Night Vault. So
well, the upgrades.
I don't know. The Arena Mortis upgrades are real good. So.
Well, yes, but there are some solid ones in there. Yeah. Like Glory Seeker. I think it's a really balanced.
I'm going to miss Baneway. But.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what card I miss, which I never thought I'd say? Hidden Path.
Dude. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
That would fix aggro. Just one card, hidden path, boom.
Yeah. All right. The next question is: what set of dice is your favorite to go when you, or your go? Blah, blah, blah. What set of dice is your go-to when you play? I can read.
Top four, Nightbolt dice. I use those in every event, and the one time I didn't use them, I missed all my attacks.
I remember that game.
You were there. You saw that.
Yeah. Throughout all of Night Vault, I use the Night Vault pre-order dice, which are the translucent ones. And I really like those. My first event in Beastgrave, they stopped working for me. So I don't think I've used them again. I like the Frothcorn dice a lot. I think those are the dice I was playing back when I could play in real life.
Yeah. Ever since they stopped sending dice in the preview, I stopped getting the new dice. So I don't know what the Frothcorn and the Worm Spat and the Crushes and the Blade Coven dice look like.
Yeah.
But I want them. So,
yeah, I think I've only been to a game store like once or twice since this COVID stuff started. So,
yeah. And like one of them was an errand for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but those are my go-to. I really like those Beastgrave top four dice, the orange ones, but boy, do they not roll fury.
Right. The next question is, what is your worst negative player experience that you've had? How did you overcome it? I guess we've probably talked about some.
To be succinct, I played an event and I walked away from the event thinking that things didn't go correctly. Mm-hmm. I cannot prove any of this stuff. There was a lot of coincidences that were validated by other people, but if all of this information is revealed after an event, then the TO cannot make a call because the event is now over.
Right. Yeah.
So I to this day, it still annoys me, but you get over it. But that was the worst experience I had because I was very upset. Because I had worked really hard. And, you know, for those of you who have been along on this journey with me, you can tell that I put a lot of time, energy, and effort and emotion into the game. And to feel like it was snatched from you based on some utter BS.
Yeah.
That wasn't like a broken game or anything. It was just...
Yeah, potentially unfairly. So.
But yeah, I would say like going back, like, yeah, I think it was unfair, but I can't prove that. So I can't, you know, whatever, but potentially unfairly is a very demoralizing experience. And it makes you question like, was all the effort and energy you put in worth it?
Yeah. And I think, I think not being sure also is kind of annoying. So.
Yeah. Like that lack of certainty. Yeah. So that is the most negative player experience I've had. How did I overcome it? I mean, time. Just get over it. You can't do anything about it. My goal is to go back to the event and kick that person's butt. and do it the right way. So
yeah.
Can't wait to play that person.
I think I've been pretty fortunate to not have anything that I would consider like a really negative player experience. I think maybe the times that stick out to me the most are when like if someone is, if one person is winning, or like if I'm winning by a lot, or something happens right at the beginning, I think sometimes people can kind of shut down and, you know, maybe get kind of upset. And I understand that. It's not, I think I do it to some extent too. If, you know, when I'm trying to do something and then it just doesn't work at all, and I feel like the, you know, the rest of the game's kind of a waste. I think it's easy to get grumpy there, but, in general, I think one of the things I like about this game is that a lot of the people that I've played in real life are just great. And, so I don't think I have like a specific experience that really sticks out to me other than, you know, people being kind of grumpy, I guess, that they're losing. And, but I mean, I think we all do that to some extent. So I don't really have a great answer for that one. The next question is, what faction and player do you think will win John's UK Masters event, which is his invitational cam game event?
Yeah, I would have said Tommy Convoy and Thorns of the Bark Queen.
Yeah, but
I think he's finally realized how utterly dominant they are. And so Tommy's very much like, oh, if people think it's OP, I won't play it.
Really?
And I was like, well, where was that mentality like 3 months ago? But I'm just messing with you, Tommy. You know I love you. But that's who I would have pegged 100%. Now I'm not really sure. Probably Mike and his Molog. I don't know if he's playing Molog.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't think I actually know what everybody is playing. I think once they have locked that in, if they haven't already, and I looked at that, I think that I would have to take a look. I also need to think about how John's far list is going to affect stuff. So I'm not sure. I would say Molog or Thorns though. And I think Mike or Tommy, or I'm actually not even,
I think they're all great.
They're all really good.
Mike, Tommy, Tom, Better Bond. What's his, Tom's little brother.
Is Ollie playing too?
Ollie. I don't know if he is playing, but honestly, any of those people can win the event. They're all fantastic players, all very good.
Is Jay Clare going?
But I don't know, man. I don't
actually remember what the...
I don't know.
I assume so.
if they're playing, yeah. I would say, I don't know, dude. I'm just like, if Mike is playing Molog, I'm just...
yeah, there's a chance.
So annoying. Yeah. Just you explaining the game upset me. So,
Yeah. The next question is, do you think Hidden Purpose, Temporary Victory, Swift Capture, and even Show of Force would potentially be more balanced if they were after your activation instead of after an activation? He says, my thought is that it would prevent you from drawing into a new surge that you can then try to score in your activation. I think it adds to that feeling of oppression from the objective surges when your opponent didn't do anything and scores glory. I think it's a bit less feel bad if it's after their activation as opposed to in your turn.
So objectively, yes, it does make it more balanced. What I would prefer is after your opponent's activation.
Hmm. Okay. Not after yours. Yeah. Yeah.
Opponent.
Yeah, that would work too.
Then it gives you a clear window for your opponent to counter your surge, which is something we could do in Shadespire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, in general, anything would be better than the way it is now, I think, because they're just so easy to do. I guess it's good that they are after an activation and not just like anytime you want, but you know, that's, they're still really easy. The next question is, should Show of Force be restricted?
Yeah, this is a question that Matt asked in the Discord, and he goes, so I don't know. Like, I think Show Force is a really easy card to score, but I also think in Brick You,
especially in that first round.
So like, do I think it should be restricted? No. Do I see why people want it to be restricted? Yeah. Yes. And now if you look at the restriction mentality, it's like, you know, either the card is very common or it's above the curve in terms of power level.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to look at event data, but I see Show of Force a lot, at least in our gaming group.
Yeah.
Or our practice group, rather. But like, those guys are like meta players. And I guess the far list is designed to you know, affect the meta, but like, I don't know. I mean, I could see it being restricted. I wouldn't care if it was restricted, but personally, like if you were to ask me, I'd say no.
Yeah, I would say in the current meta, no. I could see it being restricted at some point, maybe after rotation, if, you know, there aren't other cards that are better than it or something. I mean, I don't know. It is really good. In some cases, it's just free glory, which I don't like, but it's a very, there's a dichotomy between how easy it is to score and then how hard it is to score other times. Like if it's early in the game and you don't have upgrades at all and it's hard to get three people in the territory, then that's fine. If it's late game and everybody's in enemy territory anyway, or you just have three upgrades on somebody, it's absolutely free. So,
but I think aggro need it.
Yeah.
Like once we get better aggro cards that are more balanced, sure, restrict
maybe
this thing.
Yeah.
Until then, like
that's my struggle with it, is that it is good for aggro, but it's as good for, you know, more passive or anybody that stacks upgrades, which, you know, I guess I wish that it was two cards. I wish that it was one card that was stacking upgrades and then the other card for having enemy territory. I don't like a lot of these dual cards that are like Gather Momentum is another one that's probably just too good because it has the two ways to score it, but it's a pretty decent card. Like the other two are like by themselves, it would be fine. Let's see. The next question is from Hussman. What's easier right now, Set the Tempo or Avatar Risen? Under what circumstances would one be easier than the other? How about after season two rotates? It just seems like those two are the go-to three glory objectives for aggro right now. While Set the Tempo is a little harder because it depends on the other objectives you score, the Avatar upgrades are going on one fighter, which paints a huge target on them.
Hot take. I don't think Avatar Risen is good.
Yeah.
I think Set the Tempo is easier, but you build for it. Right. And I think the only warband that can do it reliably is Rippas with Wild Hunt with an unorthodox build. When I say unorthodox, what I really mean is not as efficient.
Yeah.
But like every time I've played Set the Tempo, even when I've drawn in my opening hand, I score it with Rippas. Unless like I just melt, right? Unless my fighters just die. Like if I play a full game, I'm getting that card.
Yeah.
And that comes down to their really great faction hybrid and dual cards. I think Avatar Risen is actually a trap because it just clunks up your objective deck or your upgrade deck. And like, there's so many good upgrades that you're missing out on just for three glory when you can deny your opponent the glory instead, either through the gauntlets or, you know, through tied defense or maybe even just glory multipliers through Tome of Offering or Amberbone weapons. So
yeah,
I think Avatar Risen is a trap. Hot take.
Yeah, there are so many good upgrades right now that even if you take a couple of them, I mean, you really only want the Sting of the Urgrub a lot of the time, I think. So I don't think I would. Yeah, I think it's Set the Tempo, but it only works for, yeah, a couple people. So next question is also from Hussman. Other than glass, what is the best swag you've received at an event?
Well, you got a really cool, like a fist holding a hammer, right?
Yeah, that's true. That was from Nova. Yeah, I got their little trophy. That was cool.
Yeah, for me, it's like a medallion or like a medal. It's like it's from Adepticon, second place medal. It's like a cog, has the Adepticon logo on it. It's a second
place. Yeah, that's cool.
Dean got a first place one, so...
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because I think a lot of these events like to have their own trophies too.
Yeah, because I think Underworlds is actually a little unique in that they provide the trophy.
Yeah, I'm looking back at it right now, and I got one for best painted, but that was for Akkad, who paints my stuff, so I sent it to him.
Cool. Yeah, I think I also like the some of the dice I've gotten. I love the glory tokens. I think I like the glory tokens probably the most. The acrylic glory.
The green glory tokens were cool. I don't like the beast grave ones.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I wish if they were like a neon orange, like the Night Vault ones were like neon green, that would be cool. What I do really like though is the acrylic objective tokens.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Those are nice.
They seem cool. Yeah, I don't know if I've really gotten any like event specific. I guess we have the ATC dice. That's kind of neat.
It's a D6 dice, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got those. And then the winners got like an orange one.
Well, we won. I don't know what the.
Well, we got a blue one and an orange one, I think.
No, I don't know. I just have a blue one, I think.
I don't know. But. I know that at the Grand Clash event in Dallas, like Best Sportsman got a signed board with by David Sanders and
John. That is cool. Yeah, they did.
So I think that was Stephen Housenick. So
yeah, very cool.
Shout out to him. I don't even think he plays this game anymore, but shout out to him.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that is it for the questions. We did get a lot of questions about Night Vault rotating. So I think we can do a little teaser that we will probably do an episode all about that in the future. Do you want, is there anything else you'd like to say before we go?
No. I think at the end of the day, just have fun and do what you got to do. Don't cheat.
Sure. All right, that is it for this episode. Once again, thank you to our Patreon subscribers, or supporters, rather. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can at patreon.com/pathtoglory. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get the podcast. As always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.
Nice. But if you're going to cheat, don't do it on webcam. Boom. Got him.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Oh, risque.
Yeah.